President Trump and Democratic nominee Joe Biden face off for the final time in tonight's presidential debate.
I think the key question here is whether this debate changes the trajectory of the race at all. Is this something that's going to affect the hearts and minds of voters who are still thinking about the election? Or at the end of the night, are we going to have a status quo?
We'll talk about how the candidates may try to sway those undecided voters. Plus, how to keep a bipartisan friendship during a divisive election. It's Thursday, October 22nd. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Here's what's news. The decision to advance Judge Amy Coney Barrett's nomination to the Supreme Court fell along party lines today. Republican members of the Senate Judiciary Committee voted unanimously in favor, while the 10 Democrats on the committee boycotted the vote altogether. A full Senate vote on Barrett's confirmation is expected on Monday. New applications for jobless benefits fell last week by 55,000 to a seasonally adjusted 787,000. Claims over the previous 2 weeks were revised downward to reflect new data from California. Overall, that means that applications for unemployment benefits this month hit the lowest level since March. The skies are still looking cloudy for the airline industry. Southwest reported its biggest quarterly loss ever, nearly $1.2 billion. American was down twice that, with $2.4 billion in losses, and Alaska Air reported losing $431 million. Rivals United and Delta also reported massive losses in the third quarter in their earnings last week. But despite those numbers, airline stocks rose sharply today. Industry executives said they're seeing signs that Americans are starting to travel again, and investors are hopeful that a broader stimulus package could include more aid for airlines. Delta shares jumped 7%, Southwest shares added 5%, and American shares rose more than 3%. And we report exclusively that Goldman Sachs is seizing or withholding $174 million in pay from current and former executives, including CEO David Solomon, after agreeing to a nearly $3 billion settlement with the Justice Department for its role in a Malaysian corruption scandal. The bank will cut bonuses to Solomon and two top lieutenants and claw back millions in past pay to former employees, including ex-CEO Lloyd Blankfein. The bank's subsidiary in Malaysia pleaded guilty today to compliance lapses in its dealing with the Malaysian investment fund known as 1MDB. Coming up after the break, what to watch for in tonight's final presidential debate. President Trump and former Vice President Joe Biden will face off in person at Belmont University in Nashville, Tennessee tonight. The 90-minute debate will be moderated by NBC's Kristen Welker. Things will be a bit different tonight. The candidates will be separated by plexiglass shields. And after the last debate, which was riddled with interruptions, the microphones will be muted at times. It's the last chance for the candidates to make their pitch to a huge audience, and a lot is at stake. Joining me now to talk more about the debate is Wall Street Journal White House reporter Catherine Lucy and our national political reporter Ken Thomas. Hi, Catherine. Ken, thanks for being here.
Hi there.
Good to be with you.
So we've been reporting about an unprecedented surge in early voting this election. It seems like much of the nation has already made up their minds. So who is tonight's debate for? Who are the candidates still looking to appeal to? And what's the case they're going to be making? Catherine, let's start with President Trump.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. A huge number of people have voted. We're seeing record numbers of, you know, early voting because of the pandemic and because it is a very, you know, very enthusiastic voters on both sides. But President Trump is looking to see if he can connect with any of those voters that are either undecided or maybe on the fence or not that enthusiastic. And so he will, in theory, be trying to make a kind of closing argument. Obviously, this is one of the biggest audiences they're going to get now, and it's the last time voters see them face to face. You're talking tens of millions of viewers. And he's coming off of a very widely criticized performance in the first debate, where he repeatedly was interrupting, talking over the moderator, talking over Joe Biden. And a lot of Republicans felt like it was a missed opportunity to offer some kind of vision, second term agenda, and ideas. And so they are saying they would like to see him present more of that contrast tonight. Of course, it's important to note that with President Trump, he always has his own ideas, and he has spent a lot of time at his rallies and his events leading up to this, you know, dealing with other issues besides his vision for the country, you know, leaning into feuds with Dr. Fauci or with the 60 Minutes journalist, Leslie Stahl. So He's also spent a lot of time criticizing Joe Biden and his son Hunter Biden. So I would also expect that he's probably likely to use some of those attack lines as well tonight.
And Ken, how about the case Joe Biden needs to make tonight?
Well, this is Trump's last shot at defining Biden. The president has struggled during the campaign to define Biden in negative terms. And so Biden will be guarding against some crystallizing moment that may make that narrow sliver of persuadable voters move in the president's direction. You note the turnout we've had so far. We've had more than 40 million people vote. That's nearly a third of the number that voted in 2016. So part of the trick of this debate is to mobilize those voters who you want to get out before Election Day to keep them interested and keep them feel like they have a stake. I think the key question here is whether this debate changes the trajectory of the race at all. Is this something that's going to affect the hearts and minds of voters who are still thinking about the election? Or at the end of the night, are we going to have a status quo? Biden probably has less riding on this debate than Trump does because, you know, national polls and a lot of the battleground polls show him leading. But his campaign is concerned about complacency. They've tried to send that message to their supporters that every vote counts and they need a huge turnout. But despite that, he does enter the night with an advantage in polling. He's got an edge in fundraising, and his campaign feels like it has a lot of different paths that it can take to get to the 270 electoral votes. So I think a big part of tonight will be whether Biden can avoid any kind of glaring stumble that might make people shift their opinion of him. You know, based on the first debate, Biden's advisors felt that, you know, Trump will try to use the night to bully and deflect attention from the pandemic. They say the vice president will talk directly to voters, try to keep the focus on the big issues affecting them, things like the pandemic, access to health care, the state of the economy.
Let's talk about the pandemic. It's on the minds of many Americans and sure to be a topic tonight. Biden has attacked the president on his administration's response, and President Trump is defending his administration.
I mean, a lot of what we've been hearing from the president lately is about his personal experience with the coronavirus. So, you know, one thing that's notable, obviously, about tonight's debate is, you recall, we were supposed to have three. The second one was canceled. That came after, you know, the president tested positive for COVID-19 and was hospitalized. And so at his rallies and at his events, he talks a lot about how he's beaten it, how his family has come through it, and he likes to talk a lot about the treatments that he received and the kinds of treatments that he wants to make available for Americans. But this debate comes as, you know, cases are rising in parts of the country, and that is not slowing down. He is also picking fights with, his chief scientific advisor, you know, Dr. Anthony Fauci, who has, you know, if you look at polling, the public has great trust in. And so I would think that Joe Biden will again really emphasize that he wants to trust the scientists and that he wants to focus on their advice. And the president is likely to try and sort of focus on the things that he sees as solutions, but also really the idea that he wants to pivot to economic recovery, which has been a theme for him throughout this campaign.
Yeah, I think the Biden campaign has long felt that the response to the pandemic would be the major issue in this campaign, and that the election will largely be a referendum on how the public thinks the president handled the pandemic. I think they see this criticism of Dr. Fauci as a, you know, a winning issue for them. They feel like Fauci is well regarded by the public, and for the president to criticize him is just not helpful to the president's reelection. So I think we'll see a public show of support by Biden for Tony Fauci. I think you'll also see some kind of version of what we saw from President Obama yesterday in Philadelphia. You know, he made the point yesterday that, you know, Trump had tested positive earlier this month and that he couldn't take the basic steps to protect himself. So how can he then protect the country? I think you'll see Biden make a similar kind of point on the pandemic, that the president's own infection shows the weakness of his response to the pandemic.
Let's talk about several of the swing states we have in play here. Something else we might hear about tonight is fracking. Trump has repeatedly said that Joe Biden wants to ban it. Biden says he won't. Why might this come up tonight?
Well, the president sees fracking as an effective issue to be talking about, especially in the state of Pennsylvania. In 2016, the real reason Trump won was that he flipped Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania, you know, from blue to red, narrowly winning those three states. And his path to victory, you know, Ken is right that the Biden team sees multiple paths to victory. The Trump team still sees a way there, but it is a narrow one, and it does still likely involve winning at least one of those three states. And a lot of advisors and people around him think that Pennsylvania may be the most likely bet. And they see that pushing this argument that Biden is down on fracking, which Ken can get into the nuances of, is effective, particularly in Western Pennsylvania. So I think that is potentially something you could hear from the president again.
Yeah, it's been a football in Pennsylvania during this campaign. What Biden has tried to say is that he would support a ban on new permits for fracking on public lands. But, you know, most experts will note that most of the fracking occurs on private lands. So the Biden campaign feels like, you know, this is an issue that the president has tried to claim that Biden will ban fracking, when in reality he would only do it for public lands. But it speaks to the importance of the Great Lakes region. The Biden team really feels like locking down those three states, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, are job one as it relates to the battleground map, and that if they can win there, sort of restore that blue wall, so to speak, then it really opens up a lot of pathways for him to win in significant fashion and in convincing fashion. You know, Florida is a state that, you know, is a perennial battleground. It seems like every presidential election, it's decided by 1% or so. And I think the Biden people also feel, though, that Arizona is a state where they, you know, could put the president on defense and perhaps, you know, move a Western state into the Democratic column for the first time in a long time.
Any other areas of weakness where you think the candidates will be susceptible to attacks here?
Some of what we're looking for tonight is how the president handles himself, frankly. I mean, I think, as we spoke about earlier, he was criticized heavily for his style and his tone in the first debate, that was a big turnoff for a lot of voters and a lot of Republicans. So honestly, one key thing is just, can he, you know, offer sort of a calmer presentation? Can he let Joe Biden speak a little bit more? Now, we haven't talked about this, but one thing that will be different tonight is that the microphones for the candidates will be muted for some portions of the debate. Essentially, it's divided into six different segments with different topics. They each get a 2-minute opener at the beginning of each segment. The opponent's microphone will be silenced, you know, during that section. So they will have some amount of uninterrupted time to speak, which could also change the tenor of the evening. So that, I think, is another thing to watch for.
Ken, final thoughts?
President Trump has made pretty clear that he is going to bring up Hunter Biden, you know, the former vice president's son, and Hunter Biden's international business dealings. You know, it's a question that Biden will clearly be ready for. But whenever his family is criticized, you know, there's always a question of whether Biden will become emotional, you know, if he'll show a flash of anger. There was an incident in Iowa last year in which a voter brought up Hunter Biden's business dealings directly to Biden during a town hall. And, you know, Biden got very upset. He called the man a damn liar, and it became a thing. And so I think how Biden responds to the Hunter Biden criticism will be something to watch. I think the Biden campaign has indicated that bringing up his family shouldn't be viewed as deflection from what America's families feel like. And so I think Biden will try to turn those questions around and say, look, this is not really relevant to people who are dealing with the pandemic, who have lost their jobs, who are you know, going through hard times. And so I think that will be very interesting, because, you know, the president clearly has telegraphed that he's going to bring it up early and often.
I think a lot of people thought from the first debate that one of Biden's strongest moments was when he responded to the president when he spoke about Hunter Biden and his struggles with addiction. And he spoke very directly about how much he loved his son and how his son has, you know, struggled with issues that lots of Americans have struggled with. So that, I think, it was maybe a moment that he had not entirely prepared to have, but it seemed to resonate with a lot of people.
That's White House reporter Catherine Lucey and national political reporter Ken Thomas. Thank you both so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And finally, if you're watching at home with people who don't share your political views, you may want to take a page from some neighbors we spoke to in the swing state of Pennsylvania. The Mitchells are lifelong Democrats. Their neighbors, the Gateses, are lifelong Republicans. But the families are friends. They've even been together in a bubble during the pandemic. So our Pittsburgh bureau chief, Claire Ansberry, says next to the political signs supporting Biden and Trump on their lawns, they've put up some homemade ones.
They were concerned about hostility and the impact of that on their kids. So they decided, you know what, we are going to make our own signs. And we're going to make signs that say we love each other. And, you know, with a little heart that says we heart them and arrows pointing to each other's yards in an effort to send a message that, you know, we're on opposite ends of the political spectrum, but we can actually like each other and be civil.
And that's what's news for this Thursday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like our show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.